You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Friday to you. We appreciate you being here. And just full disclosure, it is Thursday here on our desk. We're recording this early because Ethan's got an early flight to catch down to Auburn this weekend as the Razorbacks play the Tigers. 2:30 kickoff Saturday on ESPN. Ethan, you wrote here on our website head-to-head comparisons between Arkansas and Auburn, and we're going to spend quite a bit of time going through that this morning as we preview Arkansas-Auburn basically today. A little bit later, we'll have our weekend predictions. We'll also be joined by Adam Cole of the Opelika Auburn News to get his take on the Tigers. Ethan, it really feels, though, like this week boils down to quarterback play. There's been a lot of talk about it, both on Arkansas' side and Auburn's side this week. Talen Green did not play a good game last week for Arkansas. Hank Brown basically came off the bench, even though he started. It was his first start for the Tigers last week against New Mexico after Peyton Thorne had played a terrible game in their loss to California. Number one, I realized yesterday, epiphany, that both of these quarterbacks have a color last name. I don't know why I didn't think about that earlier in the week. We were thinking about some fun things we could do with Green and Brown. But it feels like Talen has been in, and not to say this is a big game, it's a big game for these teams, obviously not a big game in the national landscape, but Talen has played in more big games. When he was at Boise State, played in the game against Oklahoma State 2 weeks ago. This is going to be the first time that Hank Brown's been in that situation, and I feel like you got to give, you know, just based on experience alone, you got to give the advantage to Arkansas at the quarterback position.
Yeah, that's who I gave it to in the head-to-head that's on our website, Whole Hog Sports right now, because Talen Green is more proven. I mean, take his Jekyll and Hyde performances, you know, as you will, but end of the day, what has Hank Brown done other than had a good game against New Mexico? Like, I don't know. I think Talen Green's proven more over his career, and that the Oklahoma State game did tell me something. I know he had the pick six that was just, you know, looking back on it, kind of a backbreaker, but he did otherwise have 477 total yards in that game, which is second most ever by an Arkansas quarterback in a game. His upside's clear. I like him in this a little bit more. Not a little bit. Actually, I like him a lot more than Hank Brown in this, just because Hank Brown has never played in an SEC game before. Neither has Talen Green, but he's played in bigger games, like you said.
We talked on Thursday's podcast about what Trent Dilfer had to say earlier in the week about defending Green and about how they had not gone back and looked at enough Lamar Jackson film. You heard Mike Gundy say the same thing the week before. Gundy said they had not watched any film of Lamar Jackson with Bobby Petrino. Dilfer said they probably had looked at about 30 to 40% of all the available cut-ups where Lamar Jackson was at Louisville and Petrino was his coordinator and head coach. It makes me wonder how much Auburn listens to those comments this week, and have they gone back and have they done a deep dive on Lamar Jackson and Petrino and how he schemed for him? Because it's quite obvious, listening to the last two head coaches, he's using Talen Green in a very similar way that he used Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that you'd be a fool if you're a team hearing other teams saying this type of stuff and not look at it. At the same time, I will come back to this. I think Bobby Petrino probably has different, like, he's prepared. I just feel like he's playing chess while others are playing checkers with how he's going to utilize Talen Green. I mean, and you heard Mike Gundy 2 weeks ago, I guess I did while I was listening to his radio show at the senior citizen,
the senior center,
seniors
in Stillwater.
Center, yeah, wherever he was in a crowd of a bunch of elderly folk, and he was telling them.
I love that he does that, by the way.
Oh, it was awesome. He said that the moment he's not coaching anymore, that he wants to watch a game there with them. Like he wants that.
And
game
I believe him.
I do too. He said, "I bet it's a great time here," or something like that. But anyway, he said on that show, he said that like the UAPB game, they couldn't learn anything from it. I mean, it was just vanilla what they were doing with Talen Green. Like Oklahoma State was the first chance to really learn what they want to do with Talen Green, I think. But I would be surprised if they don't have some different looks they'll give. I mean, surely they're preparing for defenses playing him differently. But Talen Green, you know, whenever we talk about quarterback play in this game, I think you got to also look on the other side of secondary play, because that plays a big factor. And Auburn's really inexperienced in the secondary. I gave them the edge on this because I feel like Arkansas's got some injury concerns and hasn't been great in coverage. But neither team, I think, right now feels great about their secondary. And I think that, you know, I think that Talen Green could – this is the type of team that if he gets some protection from his O-line, which that's a big if – this is the type of secondary that you could have some success against.
And the first Razorback availability report of the week was released Wednesday night. Some of the notable one for the Razorbacks is that Jalen Braxton's out in the secondary. I think that kind of surprised people based on comments that Sam Pittman made earlier in the week.
He said he anticipated him to be able to play on Monday, and then I think he still felt good about it. Maybe even into yesterday. So I think
what's going on with Braxton? What's the injury?
Initially, they said tendonitis, which, okay. I mean, I'm sure this was, but these kind of just changed their wording. They just keep on saying a bone bruise. So
Hudson Clark is out, too, for Arkansas. That he was doubtful earlier in the week. The back injury is going to have him out for the second consecutive game. Really, he's been out for the better part of three games. He made some nice plays early in the game against Oklahoma State, and then he goes out. I think he was still on special teams for a little bit in that game. But, yeah, I mean, you got Braxton and Clark out. And look, whatever you think about these players, they're number one players for a reason.
Yeah, well,
There's going to be – who knows how much of a drop-off, but there is going to be a drop-off from your starter to your second-line guy.
Well, the thing is with Hudson Clark, prior to the first game, I mean, he wasn't starting. He got – T.J. Metcalf kind of took his starting job, but he was still one of those guys that he had starting experience in the past. And I think that that's crucial, that if you have – if you have a guy who's started in the past or who's coming in and reserved for somebody, I mean, you feel good there, but it's just Arkansas. I think we said this all preseason, actually. Like, you actually felt decent about, you know, you look at their first 11 that they put out on offense and defense, but then it's just not much room to get thinner. And I think that that's what we might be seeing, especially in the secondary.
Just we'll go through the whole availability report here for Arkansas real quick. Out are Miguel Mitchell, defensive back, Patrick Kutis, offensive lineman, starting to get the feeling that he's probably not going to play this year. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but just the fact that he just continues not to be a factor at all in the conversations that you hear Sam Pittman have about his offensive line. You're going to have to help me with his name. Andreas
Puska,
tight end. He's out. We don't know why. By the way, on the availability report, they don't give a reason why they're out or why they're questionable or why they're probable. It's just got that they're out, questionable, probable.
Isn't receiver Choffrey Brown, they're both undisclosed.
Yeah.
So we don't really know what's going on there.
Dasmon James, wide receiver, questionable. That's been more of a disciplinary.
Well, he was suspended last week for violation of team rules. So I think I guess that's like a, hey, we don't know. You're not suspended anymore.
Well, it could be just, you know, I mean, you can only have so many people that suit out on your travel roster or that even travel with you. And so that might be playing a factor.
I think this is a prime example. I saw some other places, you know, listing, yes, like here's the injury report. And this is just an availability report. You can't assume with any of these guys that it's going to be an injury. Who knows if Puska or Choffrey Brown, I mean, had something else.
Sam Pittman made a comment whenever we asked him about if he was in favor of the availability reports in the preseason. He said, you know, it could be something as simple as, hey, a guy's grandmother died.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's not going to be able to play on Saturday because he's going to the funeral. Not saying that that's happening with any of these players, but that is an example of what could be listed on the availability report. Probable for Arkansas, Addison Nichols, the center. That's good news for them. Nico Davale, the defensive end, Anton Junkaj, the defensive end, Jaden Johnson, safety, Jaquindon Jackson, the running back, they're all probable.
Yeah. And I think people need to – I saw a lot of people freaking out over this injury list, and I didn't have – I was surprised by Jalen Braxton. That was the main one. All these probables, I mean, that's what it means. They're probably going to play barring something, anything unexpected. I think people are getting a little worried about the probables, but I don't think much of those. I bet Jaquindon Jackson would have been listed as probable last week had they put out a report.
Anybody stand out to you from Auburn on their availability report?
Yeah, I need to look at this.
So they've got Tyler Scott and Brandon Frazier are both out.
Yeah.
Defensive back and a tight end.
Yeah. Frazier, I believe, broke his foot, and so he's having to have surgery. I think he's out pretty long term. Cam Coleman, their wide receiver that's questionable, he apparently has been practicing some this week. he's a five-star receiver. I think he might have been number one in this class. He's really good. And then, so if he plays, that changes their receiver room a little bit, in my opinion. The weird one is Alex
McPherson.
Yeah.
He's the kicker.
He's not practiced since, like, and it's not really been disclosed. It's some sort of medical thing. And he hasn't been available since, I think, like, fall camp. And so they've been having this freshman, Towns McGough, I think is how you pronounce his last name. And he missed a 17-yarder against Cal, the backup did. But he attempted a 61-yarder in a game. So it lets you know they think he has a big leg. But, I mean, if you miss a 17-yarder, that's kind of not encouraging. So McPherson is just, like, he's remaining questionable. I think I read a report that they expect him to be back at some point this season, but they just don't know when. So.
His brother is Evan McPherson, by the way, the Cincinnati Bengals kicker.
Yeah, and he was he's a really good kicker, so that's actually a huge blow for them not having him. And then the last one I'd say is Xavion Miller. They call him Too Tall Miller there. He's on the offensive line. He's questionable. He didn't play against New Mexico, but they seemed fine in protection then. I mean, they had, I think, one pressure, zero sacks. So.
When you saw Too Tall, I told you it's like Too Tall Jones. You didn't know who Too Tall Jones was.
I'm born in the year 2000, so I guess this probably precedes me.
I mean, Too Tall Jones, a great Dallas Cowboy player.
Oh, well, I'm not a Cowboys fan, so I don't get that. When did he play for them?
70s.
Oh, yeah. Why would I know this?
70s into the 80s. He was one of the great players for Tom Landry.
I'm about to say, I don't need to put any disrespect on the name right now, saying, why would I know who he is? All I'm saying is I'm born in 2000. And when were you born?
That's undisclosed.
Okay.
It was,
me NFL players from the 40s.
I could tell you football players from the 40s.
Okay, never mind. Yeah, you would.
I grew up watching a lot of NFL films.
Okay, well.
My favorite running back was Gale Sayers, and trust me, he didn't play during my lifetime. Okay. Too Tall Jones, he's on those great doomsday defenses for the Cowboys.
Tall Miller is on the Tigers, so there you go.
That's where we're down a rabbit hole now. Hey, real quick before we get going again, we want to tell you that you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. We think it's the most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports analysis, latest in recruiting from Richard Davenport, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Running back is a really interesting one in this head-to-head comparison because you got JaQuinton Jackson, who is the number one running back in the SEC right now in terms of rushing yards, maybe in touchdowns too. He's got 6 rushing touchdowns. And then you got Jarquez Hunter, who I think is certainly one of the best running backs in the league for Auburn, and he ran wild against Arkansas last year.
Yeah, I mean, in this one, you're basically going with you're either choosing results to date or you're choosing, like, accolades in their career. And if you're choosing accolades, then go with Jarquez Hunter. If you want to go with the guy who leads the SEC in rushing yards right now, though, go with JaQuinton Jackson. I think the bigger takeaway, rather than who's got the edge, like we do for sake of this article, is just both teams have a good running back. Like, both teams have a guy who they feel like they can rely on.
What about on the defensive side? But like, what stands out to you defensively in this game? Because there's been so much talk this week about offense, Arkansas and Auburn. On the defensive end, I mean, what stands out to you from the Tigers' side?
Yeah, I think that they are, to date, a better team pressuring than Arkansas is. Keldrick Falk, he's their defensive end. He's second in the SEC with 3 sacks, tied with a few people with 3. They go in a 3-man front with kind of that buck edge rusher, Jalen McLeod, I think is McLeod. And he's 10th in the SEC in tackles. Like, they do a lot up front, I think, that can pose some threats. So I think that's honestly, if I'm looking at this game from like a matchup standpoint, the biggest thing is Arkansas's O-line versus Auburn's D-line, in my opinion. And against those linebackers rushing up the middle or around the edge, I just think that's where the game's going to be decided. I think Auburn right now feels like it's very susceptible in the secondary. I mean, Adam Cole, we've heard him talk some, and he doesn't feel like their secondary right now is a very strong point at all. So,
and we'll talk to Adam here coming up in just a few minutes. You like Auburn across the board, though, on defense.
Yeah, but I'm feeling worse about it as time goes, honestly. I their secondary both secondaries are troublesome, in my opinion, like Arkansas's and Auburn's. I mean, one of them is giving up a ton of passing yards per game. I think Auburn's one of, if not the worst in the SEC, one of the worst in their passing yards allowed. But the other team, Arkansas, you got to take into account whenever you're looking at stats that they played UAPB in a game. I know Auburn played Alabama A&M too, so probably can just scratch that. But Arkansas has some coverage issues, in my opinion. And with some injuries added on top, I just don't know how I feel about them.
The tackling, I think, is the, you know, we focus so much on, you know, what do they look like? You know, like, what do their linebackers look like? What do their linebackers look like? The tackling for Arkansas, I think, is the concern right now. You wrote earlier this week that on Pro Football Focus, Arkansas is 15th out of 16 teams in the SEC in tackling, and I think they're 109th nationally in their tackling grade by PFF. And I was listening to Sam Pittman on his radio show earlier this week out of the Catfish Hole, and he said, he was basically asked, you know, what are the two keys to the game? And he said, on offense, scoring in the red zone, and on defense, tackling. Tackling has been the concern, I think, since basically game one with this defense.
Yeah, and it's, you know, a lot of times that we think with tackling, like the linebackers, are they? It's a lot of the secondary players for the Razorbacks, I think, have struggled with tackling the most. They've gone through, apparently, all week, like tackling circuits at the start of practice. So it's just kind of, well, it's clearly something that the team is trying to address. They know it's a problem. Yeah, that's the name of the game. I mean, you can't turn a first down into a second down without a tackle. Every defensive play has to end in a tackle or somebody going out of bounds. So, you know, if Arkansas doesn't tackle well this game, Jarquez Hunter, I don't think, is the type of running back that you can just not tackle and expect to try and win.
You can find Ethan's story on our website at wholehogsports.com. If you go there, click on our football tab, you can find the headline, Head-to-Head Comparing Arkansas Football in Auburn, position by position. When we come back, we'll have Adam Cole from the Opelika Auburn News, but first a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends over at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They're your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. They're located in Uptown Rogers, and the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. We're going to go now to Adam Cole. He writes for the Opelika Auburn News, covers the Tigers. Former reporter at the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Adam, good to see you.
Good to see you guys. Yeah, happy to be here.
So what's the feeling down there going into the game this week?
Oh, man. I would imagine it's comparable to the feeling in Fayetteville and around that Arkansas program, too, relatively speaking. But I was talking to somebody about this earlier in the week, but like, feels like these are two teams that are playing for a lot of momentum for the rest of the season. Like, I don't know that many teams have a game that feels so important, especially so for Auburn, I guess, in week four, because, you know, Auburn is staring down the face of, if they lose, they have now lost to two teams this season that they beat on the road a year prior. And, you know, you're in year two of a newish head coach, and it's, you know, nothing exemplifies a step back, I think, more than that. And so I think there's a bit of an uneasy feeling, but I also think there's a relative amount of excitement. You know, you had a quarterback change last week, and granted, you know, that came against New Mexico, good time to make that change. But, you know, the question looms, you know, will Hank Brown, you know, translate to playing against SEC competition? And I think there's some excitement around that, but I also think there's a level of that, you know, uncertainty and anxiety that kind of comes with the whole sort of, you know, summation of what this game could mean for Auburn's, you know, Auburn the rest of the way. So, yeah, probably a relatively uneasy feeling on the whole here, I would say.
I thought Hugh Freeze was going to win big at Auburn, and he might. He might still do it. I think I thought, though, that they might be a little bit farther along in year two than it appears they are. What's the holdup?
That's a loaded question. I think to start with that, I think you really have to go back to his intro presser, because there was all this talk from the get-go of, you know, is Hugh Freeze going to call plays? He's called plays everywhere he's been. That's his bread and butter. But now he's at a bigger program, and, you know, he's going to have to recruit his, you know, his heart out like he never has before. So is he going to do that? And the decision that he made last year was he put together a staff of, you know, there were a lot of folks that he had never really worked with before. And he decided he wasn't going to call plays. But it's just sort of this, it was this question that existed for a long time last year that never really got a concrete answer of, okay, like, what does it look like when you're calling plays? Is this Phillip Montgomery, the offensive coordinator that he hired last year? Is this all Phillip? Is this all you? Is this a mix? Like, how is this working? And they preached this mind meld all off season of an offense that was both of them. And you get through half the year and it's, you know, it just does not look like a functionable offense. I think statistically by the end of the year, that was the worst offense Hugh Freeze had ever had as an FBS head coach. And it had moments, it had flashes, it got better on the back end of SEC play. But I think a lot of the reason that you're seeing that stagnation is because, you didn't really get to put in place what you wanted to in year one. And I mean, he's talked so many times about wishing he could just forget about last year and how he's consolidated this coaching staff now to a group that, like, he feels like he knows. He's back in, you know, the driver's seat with a lot of the play calling duties. And, you know, a lot of why he hired the X's and O's guys last year was so that he could go out and recruit. You know, he hired guys like Charles Kelly this offseason, guys who are touted recruiters, I think, to go out and pick up that slack so he can be in on the game planning. And so far, you know, with a loss to Cal, you know, in year two to show for it, it doesn't really feel like that is a significant change. But I just think there's been so much that has been muddied by that whole saga that's led to it being where it's at and him, you know, floating around 500 at the start. You know, there's still enough time. You know, there's still a lot of season left to really pick this up, but it's not where you want it to be in year two. It's not where you want it to be.
When you look in the dictionary and you look up the word impatient, there's a picture of Aubie and the Yellowwood guy. You know, Auburn, it's not the place that you go and you get to rebuild for very long. You saw what happened with Brian Harsin a couple of years ago. But, you know, you think about what Terry Bowden did. He came in and they went undefeated his first year. Tommy Tuberville, they won 9 games in his second year. Gus Malzahn had him in the national championship in his first year. Gene Chizik won a national championship in his second year. And so there's been this track record at Auburn that you can turn it around there really fast, and if you don't, you're gone. And so I wonder what the temperature is about Freeze. I mean, are people willing to let him have some time to turn this around?
I do think people are willing to give him some time, and it's, I don't know, this place is so interesting. I could ramble on forever about how it's a football program that's been mired by just like instant success and then unrealistically high expectation for forever. Like it's so interesting to watch, but the reality of it is, you know, you mentioned Brian Harsin, and I think a big difference between Brian Harsin and Hugh Freeze is that Hugh Freeze recruits, you know, and Brian Harsin, that was just something that, like, you know, I mean, I wasn't in the facility. I didn't bear witness to it every single day, but based on what showed up on paper, like, you know, didn't recruit well. I think a lot of people would argue that he didn't really put a lot of effort into it. And that has not been the case at all for Hugh Freeze. And I mean, you look at that class last year, I think wound up being a top 10 class with Cam Coleman headlining it. And, you know, they're on pace right now to have a top five class in 2025. And so I think that's really, you know, I wouldn't say the seat on Hugh Freeze is hot right now. Now, if Auburn loses to Arkansas, that might change a little bit. We'll see. But the reality is, I think he has done enough on the recruiting trail to kind of help himself and give himself that much more time. And the good news is too, I mean, you know, he's coaching for an AD who is just as new as he is and came in at the same time. And so, you know, in terms of that relationship, he's probably going to have as long a leash as possible because, you know, he was the AD's hire, so to speak. But, I don't think it has reached Harsin levels of get this guy out of here yet. And I still think there's a ways to go. And I think a lot of that has to do with just what he's proven capable of on the recruiting trail.
What did you see from Hank Brown last week and how is he different from Peyton Thorne?
Steadiness. I think, you know, there's nobody arguing that Peyton Thorne is the most experienced quarterback in that room. And I think that's a part of why things got so shocking last year when, like, you know, and understandably enough, you're working with this offense that's, you know, probably a little confounding and, you know, there's just things that maybe you're not sure of, but I think for Peyton Thorne, a lot of it is mental at this point. And I think that's what happened when things started to snowball against Cal. And with Hank, I don't know if it's the youth. I don't know if it's a lack of feeling pressure on his back as, you know, I guess kind of the youth, a young man who's not, you know, he's not playing to get to the NFL right now. He's playing to get the next season, but he just looked steady even when things weren't going right. There was a stretch there where he completed like one of six or one of seven passes. And like, it didn't snowball. And, you know, I will be curious to see how that translates this weekend and against, you know, the likes of Oklahoma and just the SEC. 'Cause you know, New Mexico isn't, they're not SEC, obviously. And I wonder how much of that made him look as poised and, you know, fleshed out as he did. But, you know, the other part of it too, that I think is really big difference wise between him and Peyton Thorne is like, you'd see Peyton either get the ball out way too soon or like hold on to it for way too long. And there were some plays last week where like, I honestly was like, if that ball was a further inch off, like Hank Brown might've had a pick and, you know, that might be where it shows up this weekend, but he gets the ball out in like, you know, without hesitation, which I think was just kind of the big thing that you were looking for with Peyton Thorne that you never really got. So steadiness is kind of the way that I summed it up. He just looked steady.
I was listening to our buddy Brandon Marcello talk earlier this week about Auburn. Of course, he covered him for a lot of years there on that beat. He was talking, Adam, I wonder if you could maybe shed a little bit of insight into this, about how there's kind of a unique NIL setup at Auburn and how they do things with their quarterback. Do you know anything about this?
I do not. I wish I had more of an answer
okay.
on that.
Well, let me ask you this way. There's been a lot of talk here in Arkansas this week about NIL and the concern over NIL and whether or not Arkansas can compete. Auburn's a school where you would think that NIL probably is pretty plush. Are there concerns at Auburn over NIL? Is this something where every school, regardless of where they are, you know, they still think they need more?
I think absolutely. I think every school thinks they need more. I don't know where Auburn sits on it. And this is the frustrating thing about this whole new brave new world of NIL, right? Is there's, you know, it's all private. There's nothing public that you can fall back on or FOIA to look into or whatever and see some ranking of, okay, this is how much financially, you know, Arkansas has compared to Auburn, compared to Alabama, compared to LSU and so on and so forth. But like, I would say that like, from what I have seen, I don't think that Auburn is in a place where like it is falling behind its peers. I just think it's such a weird thing when you get into the comparison game with it, because it's like, I always tend to look at like LSU. I think LSU is the bar for, if we want to just say SEC athletics, as far as NIL spending goes, because obviously mm-hmm. they pour it into football, but they pour it into women's basketball. They pour it into baseball. They pour it into gymnastics. They have enough to fill it up everywhere. And I don't think Auburn's there. I don't know that Arkansas is there. I have not followed Arkansas that closely, but I also know Arkansas's, you know, a different setup. And obviously you've got John Calipari there now. And so the basketball program has this whole new life. And then you've got, you know, this steady dominant baseball program, you know, under Dave Van Horn. And so I would be curious to sit down and look at that a little more and see how it all shakes out. But I do think it's very much a case of, you know, I think everywhere feels like they need more money. And I we see that a little bit at Auburn. I think a really interesting thing too, since John Cohen has gotten here, is seeing just like how much they have tried to dish out these new like premium fan experiences. That's a new thing. I think if you want to pay $400 this weekend, you can run out with the Auburn football team and stuff like that. And it's stuff I've never really seen before. But I think absolutely, I think darn near every athletic department in the country feels like they need more money and like they don't have enough, but I don't know that Auburn is really that far behind, so to speak.
You mentioned John Cohen. That's a great segue because I had something written down here about him. Ray Tanner announced this week that he's leaving South Carolina as their AD. He's going to stay in that position until a new person is hired for the role. Then he's going to transition into a senior advisor to the president of the university, whatever that means. But you had Cohen and Tanner. They both came from basically the same background. They were head SEC baseball coaches. John Cohen previously was at Mississippi State. I think he surprised a lot of people when he went to Auburn as the AD within the last year or so, because he had been the head coach at Mississippi State. He played at Mississippi State. That he was Mississippi State. Your thoughts on what he's done at Auburn and just how he's kind of like the last of a breed. There, I think once Ray Tanner resigns or retires or whatever you want to call it from this AD position, I believe John Cohen will be the only former head coach who's in an administrative role, at least as an AD in the SEC.
I think you're right on that. John has been, you know, for as much as I kind of, you know, the fan experiences thing that I mentioned, I think the biggest thing that I've seen with him is like, there has been a shocking amount of investment into facilities and quickly. So, you know, we've got, I think the headlining thing that a lot of people will look at now is there's, you know, been an approval for a new Jumbotron and like a multi-use facility on the north end of Jordan-Hare. And whenever that gets here, assuming it gets here, you know, that's something that's going to change the landscape of this campus. And that'll be significant, but he's also pouring, I think it was $30 million in renovations into Plainsman Park, mm-hmm. which is going to be really significant. I think the price tag when he did it at Duty Noble was $80 million. And so I want to say 30 is the right number. But, you know, there's been some smaller stuff, too, with I know the there's a women's athletics center here that's kind of multipurpose for softball and gymnastics that got a big overhaul when he got here. You know, so that's been really significant. I mean, I'd be remiss not to mention the Nike deal. I think that's going to be really interesting, just to kind of, once it gets here, exploring just what kind of impact that actually makes on athletes, because, you know, a lot of it secondhand, but I have heard complaints from, you know, people who have to wear Under Armour cleats that, like, you know, it's like they're painful or like they've had injuries, you know, and stuff like that. So curious to see how that looks. And obviously, I mean, he hired Hugh Freeze, and that's what he's going to be judged on more than not by the time, you know, really we get into whether it's a new head coach or his tenure ends, whatever that looks like, you know. But I think to this point, like, probably hasn't gone how you want it to, but there's, you know, still time for it to get where you want it to be. But all in all, I think he's done a good job. And I think it's an interesting move. I think it was a move that was fueled by NIL. I think there were some NIL frustrations in Starkville from what I gathered. And I think he felt like there was less of that here. But I think to this point, it's been a solid tenure. And I'll be curious to see, like, just how much further it goes and in what directions it goes more than anything.
They basically had to tear down Duty Noble and rebuild it. They've got a lot more to work with there at Plainsman Park. Beautiful baseball facility. It's kind of interesting. There's a lot of SEC ballparks that are set for facelifts. Auburn, Vanderbilt, Texas A&M. Tennessee is about to totally overhaul its stadium. Oklahoma coming into the league. It'll be interesting to see how SEC parks look 5 years from now. Especially in light of with NIL, it seems like the renovation push is going to slow down here eventually. But I guess the plans that have been in place, they're going to go ahead and go on with those in most cases. Adam, let's get you out of here on this. Keys to the game Saturday for Auburn to win, for Arkansas to win.
I think the biggest thing you know, it feels like a broken record at this point, but I think quarterback play, like, and, you know, I mean, that's a, you know, no duh, your quarterback's got to play good. But I think for Auburn, especially just with everything they've seen, I just think you want to see again that steadiness out of Hank Brown. I don't know that he needs to complete 68% of his passes, throw for 270 some yards and four touchdowns, but you need him to be steady. And I think more than that, I think more importantly, and for Arkansas fans to know, is Auburn's secondary is very young, very inexperienced, very thin at cornerback. And I think with just some of the capability of what you've seen of this Bobby Petrino offense to this point, I think if Arkansas can get out there and really set itself up to pass and pass well, like, I think this game will be an absolute shootout. I don't know who wins, but I think a lot of points will be scored. And I think a big part of that is because, you know, this Auburn secondary, I think, is going to have its biggest test yet. And, you know, if they can't hold, I think it's going to kind of spell disaster. But, you know, there's a lot of other parts of this game, obviously. But I think those are the two things I'll be looking at more than anything, is just seeing if Hank Brown translates, and then just seeing how this secondary holds up against SEC competition.
This will be Ethan's first trip down to Auburn. Would you recommend he brings the binoculars or the telescope to see from the press box?
Binoculars will get you just fine, but no, you're gonna be in the little cozy corner with us. So it'll be a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
It's a long way, that new press box. It's not like the old one.
Yeah.
It's certainly not.
Yeah.
Adam Cole of the Opelika Auburn News. We appreciate you being with us, Adam.
Awesome. Thank you guys for having me.
All right, appreciate it. And when we come back, we will Ethan will rejoin me. We'll talk about our weekend predictions. First, another word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA, a unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We appreciate you being with us. We want to tell you about our friends over at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs and the highest quality products. Come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Before we get to weekend predictions, I want to address Ethan spreading misinformation on Facebook this week. Tell people what you did and just go ahead and own up to it.
Well, I tried to share an article from our Whole Hog Sports account to our Whole Hog Sports Facebook, and Facebook said they took it down because we were spreading something in a misleading way, trying to, you know, misinform the people. But
can I read the post?
Yeah, this is what Facebook doesn't believe.
This is misinformation, according to Facebook. Quote, Arkansas has scored an FBS high 15 rushing touchdowns and leads the nation in third down conversion percentage entering the SEC opener at Auburn. Tom Murphy has more.
And Facebook thinks I lied. If I need to go through the appeals process and take screenshots of the NCAA website with stats.
Do you think maybe they're saying that there was nothing more from Tom in the story? Like maybe we just gave it all away in the tease?
I don't know. I mean, they need to, whatever the problem is, they need to chill out. They also took down, I noticed, we have, a lot of times we'll do stories on our website just with giving you how to watch the game, forecasts, but there's also a betting line in there. And Facebook does not like whenever we share those. They will take the betting lines down. So they're running a tight ship right now. And if we do anything that they don't like, they are going to take it down and make sure we know about it. So that's all I got. They didn't like the post about they think we are lying, saying that Arkansas is leading the nation in rushing touchdowns, which honestly, if they watched last season, I'm guessing whoever at Facebook flagged this and sent it watched the Razorbacks last season and can't believe that Arkansas is getting in the end zone.
If we put election polls up on our site right now, what do you think Facebook would do?
Oh my goodness. We'd be banned. Our page would go down.
Let's get into weekend picks. We're not going to go there. We'll talk about some SEC games first. Ethan, let's talk about the ranked games from out of conference, though, this weekend. It starts with old Brett Bielema in Illinois. They're number 24 this week. They're undefeated, 3-0, and they go to Nebraska, who's ranked number 22. I don't know that a lot of people had Illinois-Nebraska on their top 25 matchup when the season began. I know you're not real adept at Big Ten, but who you got?
I know that Nebraska's quarterback kind of looks like Patrick Mahomes.
Not kind of. He's basically a Patrick Mahomes clone.
Yeah, and which, you know, if
Dylan Raiola.
Raiola. If you have a guy who looks like Mahomes and you're ranked.
But he wants to be Mahomes. Like, have you seen his pregame routine? He goes out and basically mimics the entire Mahomes pregame routine from the jump to the waving at the crowd. It's like, what do they say? Flatter. I don't know where I'm going with this.
Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
There you go. Blake is smartest man in the room, even though he's on the other side of the glass. This is kind of taking it to a creepy level, what he's doing with the
Mahomes. I don't. It's working. What an exciting time to be a Nebraska Cornhuskers fan. You have a quarterback doing this and actually playing well, too. I mean, and you're ranked? And you have Brett Bielema and the Illini coming in town? What a freaking Friday night in Lincoln. Give me the Cornhuskers.
Remember Brett, his last game at Wisconsin, they beat Nebraska 70-31. Then he jumped on the Arkansas plane a couple of days later. Nebraska's a 7.5-point favorite. I like Matt Rhule a lot. I think he's going to do some good things at Nebraska. Is it going to be Tom Osborne level? I don't know. But I think Nebraska wins this. The thing that kind of interests me to me is that how much does the Big Ten change when the total on this game is 42.5? Kind of a high-scoring game for a couple of ranked Big Ten teams.
I got to give some credit to Lincoln again, too. I'm wearing my College World Series shirt today. That is always, if make a trip to the College World Series, I stay in Lincoln. I like that town.
You stay in Lincoln?
I do.
I had to stay in Lincoln 2 times, and then I got smart about how to book your hotels in Omaha. Basically, you got to book really freaking early, even if your team hasn't made it there yet. The Lincoln to Omaha thing, it's fine, but boy, it gets tiring, especially when the team's there for 2 weeks.
Unless you love Lincoln like me.
Another Big Ten game. First time Big Ten game, the CBS theme. I wish we could play that right now because we know how much Ethan loves it. Mm-hmm. Southern Cal goes to Michigan this weekend. Southern Cal ranked number 11, Michigan number 18.
Give me USC. I don't know if I'm buying Michigan at all this year. And I think USC, what they did against LSU, take it for what it is. I don't know if we know how good LSU is, but what they did week one impressed me enough to I'll pick them on the road.
Yeah, I think Southern Cal, too. Michigan, they struggled with Arkansas State a week ago.
Yep. If we're using what's it called transitive property, we know that UCA, there was a controversial ending there. UCA probably should have beaten A-State. So by transitive property, Michigan really struggled against UCA.
In the Big 12. I believe you. Trust you.
I'm just – and Arkansas State plays at Iowa State this week, by the way. Keep your eyes on that one.
I believe you. I trust you. Utah is number 12. Oklahoma State's number 14. This game is in Stillwater. This might be the Big 12 championship. Kind of fun. You got two seventh-year quarterbacks in this game. Cam Rising expected to play after he had an injury a week ago. Obviously, Oklahoma State with Alan Bowman. Oklahoma State's a 2.5-point favorite.
You know, this is me speaking more on just what I know about Oklahoma State, why I'm picking them rather than Utah. I think that we saw against Arkansas that Oklahoma State just has some sort of culture about it right now that they seem to rise to, you know, the occasion right now with in games kind of like that. I mean, but they are, you look last year and they did lose to UCF. Like, they're just kind of a roller coaster where they'll have a couple duds in there. But I just think I like in this game a more veteran Oklahoma State team, especially being at home. If this was in Utah, I'd probably pick Utah. But I just think Oklahoma State will figure it out at Boone Pickens. I'm not sold on Oklahoma State yet either, but I do think that experience is something. And I'm not talking just Alan Bowman experience. I'm talking the offensive line mainly, that can pay dividends.
Utah beat Baylor 2 weeks ago in a non-conference game between Big 12 teams, 23-12. Oklahoma State obviously beat Arkansas. I'm going to go with Oklahoma State because they're at home, although I'm not going to be surprised if Utah wins it. You were talking about Oklahoma State's got the culture. Utah's got the culture, too. They've been really, really good in the Pac-12. This is their first official Big 12 game, again, because of the way the Baylor game was set up. That was a non-conference game that was scheduled a long time ago. They were allowed to keep that and play it as a non-conference game. Oklahoma State at home, I'll take them. They got to figure out how to get Ollie Gordon going, though. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're not going to reach their potential in the Big 12. Moving on to the SEC, an intriguing out-of-conference game this week. UCLA goes to LSU. The Tigers are ranked number 16, and they are a 24-point favorite in Death Valley.
It was more intriguing in women's basketball this past year in the NCAA tournament. This is, I think LSU is going to blow them out. UCLA got pummeled against Indiana last week, if I'm right on that. And I think LSU is going to be able to handle business. I mean, their opening is a 24-point favorite, so either open or that's where it's at on that's where it was on Thursday. So,
yeah, LSU. I think LSU wins that game at home. UCLA, their travel this year, I think they travel something like 22,000 miles because they've got two transcontinental flights in the Big Ten. They fly to Lincoln. They fly to Louisiana. They played at Hawaii earlier this year. That team, my goodness, the amount of travel that they've got this year. And I have to believe that that's going to catch up with them at some point.
Them and the Cal Bears both.
Yeah.
I mean, it's – I don't – that's
– You know what ACC stands for now?
Across –
The All-Coast Conference.
I was going to go across the country commute.
LSU. LSU. I pick LSU to beat UCLA. Vanderbilt goes to Missouri. Any trouble picking the Tigers?
You know, I think that Vandy's honeymoon is a little – it ended last week in Atlanta. They played in Atlanta, right? Against
yes.
Georgia State. Yeah, I think Mizzou's going to
They were in
them.
Attendance.
Yeah. I will say this is the – God, it gets – I don't want to watch this game because I just feel like the colors of the jerseys is going to be disgusting to look at.
Missouri's a 20-point favorite. I'm interested and I don't know if it's going to say more about Vanderbilt or if it's going to say more about Missouri. I feel like it may be a little bit closer game than 20 points. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Missouri goes out and they just totally cream them. But I feel like it could be a little bit closer a game. Missouri, I'm still in a, you know, no pun intended, I'm still in a very show-me, you know, mode with them. I don't trust Missouri. Maybe they're really good. I don't trust them. They're ranked number 7, and they're a 20-point favorite. A couple of more SEC games before we get to Arkansas and Auburn. This one's fun. 1-2 Florida goes to 1-2 Mississippi State. The Gators with hot seat Billy Napier, a 6-point favorite on the road after Mississippi State was blown out at home last week by Toledo.
I had something change in my heart this morning, and I decided to change my pick from Florida to Mississippi State. And I think it's because I've put Florida at dead last in my rankings all season, and I can't stop now. And I know you have maybe an alternative reason why I think I know where you're going to go with this one. But also, Florida's got a lot of guys out. Eugene Wilson, their receiver, that's actually, I mean, talk about a diamond in the rough, I feel like, right now with that team. He's such a good player, and he's out, according to the availability report. So I'm going to go Mississippi State. There's no good reason other than it's all my reasoning is based on Florida.
I picked Florida to beat Miami. I picked Florida to beat Texas A&M. Why stop now? Florida to beat Mississippi State. I do like the fact that it seems like these teams are fairly evenly matched. Florida's played a much, much tougher schedule than Mississippi State has. Mississippi State, they started the season with an FCS team. Then they went to Arizona State, who I don't think is real good, and then obviously lost to Toledo last week at home. I don't see any reason why Florida could not go in there and win it. But like I say all the time, whenever you've got teams that have a coach that's in a hot seat mode, have they let go of the rope yet? Because if they let go of the rope, then all bets are off. All bets are off. But I think Florida could beat Mississippi State. And then the big SEC game of the week, I think College Game Day might be there. Am I right? Sixth-ranked Tennessee goes to 15th-ranked Oklahoma. It's going to be the Sooners' first SEC game. It's in Norman. Tennessee, a 7-point favorite. And obviously the story in this game is that Josh Heupel, who quarterbacked Oklahoma to the 2000 National Championship, is going back to Norman, where he was fired as a co-offensive coordinator about 10 years ago.
Yeah, ESPN had a great story on this yesterday, or whatever day it was, Wednesday. that I read and just really laid out the whole Heupel in Oklahoma history. And I found myself feeling bad for – I just felt bad for him. Like, you know, he's the quarterback there, won a national championship. He, like, was Oklahoma, if that makes sense. And it just felt like, you know, it was almost like, let's get him out so we can get Lincoln Riley in. And then Lincoln Riley, we see what happened there. That aside, I talked about disgusting uniform matchup with Vanderbilt, Missouri. This is going to be pleasant. Orange against red. But I like the orange. I like Tennessee. I like that defense. Oklahoma's offensive line, I think, is a concern right now.
They've had some injuries.
And Tennessee's defensive line is legit. So,
I like Tennessee on both sides of the ball. We talked about it earlier in the week. When we were talking about your SEC power rankings, I said I'd put Tennessee number one right now based on what they've done to this point in the season. I know they haven't played the names that Georgia and that Texas has played. My gosh, Tennessee, they look really good on both sides of the ball, offensively and defensively. We talk about Heupel. I mean, OU firing him was a total transformation in his career. Barry Odom hires him at Missouri. He does great things there for 2 years. He goes to Central Florida, does great things there. He's gone to Tennessee and turned Tennessee around. He has them back as a nationally relevant program. When, you know, think about all the coaches that came through there over the years who couldn't do that. Tennessee really good on both sides of the ball. OU is good defensively. That might keep it a little bit closer than maybe some people think it'll be, but OU is really struggling on offense. I just don't see where OU can score with Tennessee, and I think Tennessee covers that 7-point spread because I think if Heupel gets the chance, he'll run it up on OU this weekend. A few other SEC games. We're not going to pick them, but we'll tell you what's going on in the conference. Texas ranked number one for the first time since 2008. They'll host Louisiana Monroe on Saturday night. That game will be on ESPN Plus and SEC Network Plus. Ole Miss ranked number five. Saturday night, they'll host Georgia Southern on the SEC Network. Another Saturday night game, Akron goes to South Carolina. Another Saturday night game on SEC Network Plus. Bowling Green is at Texas A&M. And one other non-conference game for the SEC this week. It's going to be a Saturday morning game, an 11:45 kickoff Central Time on SEC Network. Ohio goes to Kentucky. Now Arkansas-Auburn. The Tigers are a 3-point favorite. Arkansas, if you look, to me it feels like, Ethan, that if you just look at what they've done in their big game this year, because both of them have played pretty comparable schedules, I think if you look at strength of schedule, Arkansas is something like 105th, Auburn somewhere around 112th. So neither of them have played great schedules, but they have played one tough power conference team. I thought Arkansas looked better in Stillwater than Auburn looked at home against Cal. But the Tigers are the home team. They've got a new quarterback since the Cal game. This one's kind of a hard game to pick.
It is. I struggled picking this one. I am going to pick Arkansas, and it boils down to I think that I trust Arkansas right now.
You know what we should do? We've got the hog hat behind you. You could go like Lee Corso and put the hog hat on right now. We've got a helmet up over here, too. You can put that on.
I didn't do it for my monumental Arkansas over UAPB pick or Arkansas UAB, so I won't start now. But
my son asked me to buy him a hog nose when he went to the Arkansas UAB game the other day. I could bring that in for you, too. You could put that on.
Yeah, I'll pass on that one.
You're picking Arkansas.
I was picking Arkansas.
I'm just seeing how much I can screw you up.
You did. Threw me off. But I like them offensively better right now. I think that I also think Arkansas, that game at Oklahoma State, really could have prepared them for this game. I mean, Auburn's only played at home so far, and they lost to Cal at home. And I think that I'm going to take an Arkansas team that almost probably should have beaten a top right now 15 team on the road. I'll take them going to Auburn. I know that's a different animal, that it just gets bigger in the SEC, quite literally. But I like Arkansas, I think, being able to run the ball, and I like Arkansas's receivers to maybe have a little bit more production this game, not just Andrew Armstrong. I will say this is the type of game that I don't feel like it's going to be decided until the fourth quarter. If it's decided before, then I'll be kind of surprised.
Green is better than Brown. Green is prettier than Brown. Taylen Green is going to play a better game than Hank Brown on Saturday. That's my prediction, and I think Arkansas will win this game. And I'm basing this again mostly on what I saw 2 weeks ago from them. Auburn, they made a change at quarterback, but quarterback wasn't the only problem they had against California. I think if Arkansas can play against Auburn the way it played against Oklahoma State, I think they got a chance to go down there and win. And one of the interesting things here is that if you take away the highway robbery in 2020 when Arkansas should have won that game in Jordan-Hare Stadium, the home team hasn't won this series since 2018. Now, Auburn won it in 2020, but Arkansas outplayed them, should have won that game, and I think everybody knows that that was the case. The road team has played really well in this, and it's been kind of a hard series to pick over the years.
It has been. I think that Arkansas, if there's going to be a game that I think you look back on the schedule, if they don't make a bowl game, and you say, I think that this is a game that you look back if you don't make a bowl and that was a loss. I just don't see on the schedule any other like real legitimate path to a bowl game without winning. Here's my opinion. If you can't beat Auburn, I don't think you're going to beat A&M. It doesn't get much easier. And in the SEC,
you got to win the games.
That's hard to say that it doesn't get, like, they're all hard in the SEC, but it doesn't get too much easier except for, I mean, they have a trip to Starkville, but then again, crazy things happen down there. It's all difficult. If you can't beat Auburn, I just don't know how good the rest of your season looks. This is, I think, a real trajectory game for both teams.
These next 2 weeks are going to be big for Arkansas. If they want to make a bowl game, I think they got to get at least one win in these next 2 weeks. If they don't win the next 2 weeks, it's really hard from there.
Yeah.
You got Tennessee, Ole Miss, Texas. I mean, you know the gauntlet. They got Missouri at the end of the year. That's always been a tough game for Arkansas. You give me a Texas High Fayetteville High pick real quick before we go?
Sikkim Bulldogs, is that a thing?
I don't think it is. I don't think it is.
I don't know. I'll pick – I like FHS in that one because I really –
You really didn't have to give me a pick.
No, I want to give you my pick, though, because – because I like when I get on the broadcast and I hear Matt give us a touchdown. I'm not going to even try and replicate your touchdown, Fayetteville.
Nor am I right now.
Okay.
It's better organic in the moment.
Okay. Well, that's why I'm picking them, because I've heard a lot of those calls over the past 2 years.
This will be a great high school game Friday night, Fayetteville High and Texas High over at Harmon Field. We appreciate you being with us. Ethan will be in Auburn this weekend. You can read all of his coverage at WholeHogSports.com. We'll have other people there covering the game as well. We'll be back on Monday to recap the Razorbacks and the Tigers. Appreciate you being with us. Hope you've joined us at our website. Until Monday, have a great weekend, everyone.